greetings and salutations. Welcome to the Agora, a forum to examine the origin, purpose, meaning, and destiny of humanity, or whatever the heck we decided to throw together on the drive-in. My name is Garrett. I'm here with my buddies Richard and Daniel. We like to say that we are the place where you talk about all the things that you want to but are often afraid to. We also believe that the questions of faith, ethics, morality, society, and meaning are far too important to be solved via quick Facebook memes or celebrity rants on Instagram, or as Daniel likes to point out, 60-second CNN segments.
Those are the best.
By far, where everything is breaking news, no matter what. So we are we're not experts in any one particular area. I would say we're each a bit of a polymath. We've worked in a lot of fields, served in a lot of areas over our lives. And one of the things that we have noticed is that the art of genuine discussion and genuine real dialogue, where you actually care about the viewpoint of others and actually want to hear what they have to say, is a lost art. One of the areas we've worked at over the years, each one of us in some capacity, is on college campuses. And we've discovered something as simple as having a basic conversation with a simple question, while it seems overwhelmingly simple and novel, actually generates a ton of interest because in many cases, that's not something people receive every day. So people aren't actually getting dialogue where, again, you're interested in what the other person has to say. You're considering the possibility that based on new evidence, based on new reason, I might be open to changing my viewpoint or to changing my particular belief. It's a simple concept, but it's a dying art form. And that's why we're here. And that's why I want to be able to discuss issues of the day with all of you while having a little bit of fun at each other's expense at the same time.
I didn't sign up for that, but
don't worry, I signed your name for you.
Oh. I think put really succinctly is that classical tolerance is the idea that you tolerate others regardless of whether you agree with them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're not really tolerating them. So the idea is that we have discussions with people that would never agree or never even meet in the same place, but which you can come to vastly different conclusions and still realize that the person sitting across the table from you isn't your enemy.
Yeah, and that they're a human being. And in this Correct. Day and age, it's so easy to hide behind an affiliation. We were talking just earlier today about the idea of party politics and how great it could be if we were able to eliminate this idea of party or organizational affiliation and actually look at individuals. What did they believe? What did they actually think?
Merit-based political system?
Merit-based? Come on. No, it's about who you were born to. It's about what organization you decided to randomly affiliate with. It's about what Facebook groups you like, clearly.
Well, it's actually more like who can target you with the most like successful ad campaign.
That too.
And get your money the best way, I guess, too.
Yeah, darn you, ShamWow.
Sometimes, but if that was true, then wouldn't Michael Bloomberg have won the Democratic nomination because he spent $1 billion.
He only had $72 billion. Oh, if he had 75,
no,
he totally would have won.
I'm just saying that. I think people say that kind of stuff all the time.
No,
but
I think the amount you spend is the amount you receive, like through support and stuff like that. So that's advertising.
Yeah, but even then, I think there's limits on that. I think that's overrated.
I think that goes to a point that we can discuss here. The idea of the age of influence is so nuanced these days. I mean, people make professional living just being social media influencers. That's literally their title. They're right. paid to promote stuff. They're paid to influence stuff. I have a friend I graduated high school with, and she literally calls herself this. She's like, I'm a professional hot chick. And so she travels the world, and she gets paid by – she's worked for – I won't sell the companies, but drink companies, clothing companies. She gets paid to party with celebrities and wear their clothes and to tell people, hey, you should do this. This is awesome. You should drink this. It's the best. You should wear this. It's awesome. She gets paid to influence the way people think.
Right.
And she happens to be incredibly good looking, so that helps. But – so this idea of how do you have influence and again – I am so disheartened when I see complicated, complex, deep-seated issues of the day that merit great discussion reduced to clicking and pasting a meme on Facebook or sharing an Instagram video. I'll give people respect when they at least take time on Facebook to give their own thoughts, even if I completely disagree with them. What's really frustrating is when they literally just copy and paste what their friend sent on to them.
Well, and I hate the memes that are like, they present themselves as facts when they have like just bold white letters on it and they just like state things, but there's like no way to see if it's true or not.
Yes, absolutely.
So
Yeah, I mean, I could give an example. I think it was KTU News last week used the word. And so this is, you know, at Willamette, I studied media framing. And one of the interesting things, it says, you know, COVID death toll jumps to 130.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when I went and actually looked at the numbers, it was consistent with the mm-hmm. every 2 or 3 day number that we've been getting, which is 3. And yet they used the word jumped. And I thought that was pretty dishonest.
It's a loaded term.
It, like, jumps mean, like, a huge percentage-wise, but actually it was the normal percentage of everything that we've been seeing.
Yeah.
And during the peak, it was, you know, 4 or 5 a day, so I wouldn't call that jump. Anyway, I just that's an example of it. Yeah. I think the other thing to talk about is there was a recent my internet has gone dead here.
Hey, we're about to get to first-world problems, so
yeah.
That's perfect.
But the research, there's a recent research article that came out that showed that millennials, most of them only read the news headlines. And I can't really blame them. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't a bash millennials thing, because I'm a millennial, so. But
you just snuck in there.
I did. The interesting thing, though, is that people are, they're so overloaded, I think, with information that to sift through information is really difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's time consuming. And most people don't do that. But so a new study by the Knight Foundation shows that their regular news consumers, they rely on journalism for information, entertainment, and guidance on how to vote. So they're actually putting a big stock in that. So of the 1,660 young adults, it showed that 88% of people aged 18 to 34 access news weekly, including 53% who do so every day. However...
How do they define news? I'd be interested.
Well, it breaks it down here. Yeah. Twitter and which groups. It says 55% of African American adults get news on Twitter at least once a week, compared to 27% mm-hmm. for Hispanics and 26% of whites. The main thing, though, is it came to the conclusion that like 69% of millennials don't read past headlines.
Hmm.
So there's no complexity, and as we know, I mean, if you've lived any amount of life, if you get outside of a bubble, an echo chamber, things are a little more complicated than just what people make them out to be. I think that's an interesting thing to think about is...
Well, and we have digital echo chambers these days, and think about it, you can literally orchestrate and calibrate your social media to tell you the stories you want to hear.
Right.
From what you want to hear.
Now
I'm gonna,
just so that I don't share, just do what I just said, you know, which is just share the headline.
Do as he says, not as he does.
Yeah, no. The one thing though that the study did show is that quality is actually more important. So I don't know if any of you have grandparents who've maybe shared. It used to be the old email chains. You know, you'd get the big long email chains from grandparents.
And they wouldn't
check it. And so one of the things this study did reveal, though, even though millennials only read the headlines, there's two things that it showed that is important for millennials. And one is that they're unlikely to develop brand loyalty. And the other thing is that they're less likely to share fake news. So actually, the younger generation will sift more. However, I do think that there is this is conflicting with some other studies I've seen. So, you know, go read it for yourself. But
it's a novel concept.
I think that it's my experience with the younger people, like younger millennial into Gen Z, like you say something like super, you know, extreme or sensational, they're like skeptical of it. Like, okay.
Like, that sounds too crazy to be true.
That sounds not true. But then it's like the way, like, older than that people share on Facebook, it's like the crazier it is, the more like likely it's shareable. Like, wow, look at this new information I just learned.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's a crazy sensationalized article or headline, but then like, whoa, what? I don't know. I think there's different levels. Like, growing up in the digital age, I think, makes people more skeptical.
Well, one of the
fact-based research, but it seems like that.
Yeah. Well, this study shows, it says one of the core research tenets that seems to be true is that everybody thinks that the media is highly biased. So it seems like there's a constant total distrust of all media. In fact, in here it says there's no particular media outlets mentioned, but it does show that millennials are well aware that the country is in crisis and the media are all too often part of the problem rather than part of the solution. And so I would totally agree with that. I think that's
well,
true.
Facts don't sell. It's just pretty obvious. I think even when you spend hours and hours and hours writing, even just on your own in your own friend group, you know, it's the little things that get people's attention. But if you spend a lot of time trying to outline all the nuanced stuff, a lot of it doesn't get attention because you're not trying to convince them of anything. They don't have any reaction to it, right?
You're just saying this happened and then this happened.
I think when somebody has a reaction to something, whether in agreement or in a disagreement, they're more likely to like share it and you know, stuff like that. But if it's just facts, then it's boring.
It reminds me of the scene out of the great American classic cinematic achievement, Anchorman 2. Ron Burgundy, one of the greatest characters ever developed. But there's a scene there, and it's satire, but yet it is poignantly true. I love when satire actually speaks to a very deep philosophical truth. There's a scene where the premise is they're launching the first 24-hour news network. So it's back in the 70s. It's kind of the advent of 24-hour cable news. And they're trying to compete to get the highest ratings, their team. And they're like, this is so boring. We're just reading what's going on. And they're like, well, it's the news. It's boring. You just talk about what's going on. And Ron has this moment, this epiphany, where he says, what if instead of telling people what they needed to hear, we just told them what they wanted to hear? And everyone just kind of, their jaws drop, and it's just, what did you say? And they take that and run with it, and they're like, we're just going to tell people what they want to hear, and they're going to tune in because they love it. And it's again, satire, but it's so poignant, and it's very telling of the times today that there is more money to be made, there's more attention to be gathered, there's more of a brand to be built, telling people what they want to hear.
Well, I don't know if I'd look at it like that. So the way I see it is, with our fight or flight model of thinking, I think everyone has fight or flight, and everyone responds to it. Mm-hmm. And part of what it is when you have media news outlets that tell you what to fear and where the scary things are, sometimes you end up developing a fear complex for something that really isn't all that fearful or all that bad. But because you've seen it, they call this echo chamber, you know, like you see it enough and enough and enough, or you think that those kinds of people are the problem. Mm-hmm. Insert whatever thing of those people you'd like.
It creates tribalism.
It creates tribalism, but I think it also, it gets you, we respond to fear. We really do. So where we think, you know, the thing that we must be afraid of is, that's where we come back and say, oh, well, that's the thing. Those kinds of people are the problem. Yeah. They're the kinds of people that are ruining this country. And it doesn't allow you to pull back and say, like, well, who are those people? You know, what do they really think? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
They're more than just one particular viewpoint they have. There's a whole story to who they are.
Yeah, and I mean, they're humans.
Yeah.
And that is interesting. That, you know, the road to dehumanizing people, even people of your own country, et cetera, the quickest way to get there is to say, well, they're this.
Or a
label of some kind. Yeah. There are so many great things I learned in rhetoric about how to create persona, label, how to frame things. And the media does a really good job of this. Now, it's not always dishonest, but in many ways, it's leading you to where they already want you to be.
Yep.
Leading them to a conclusion that they've already come to. Word choice is super important. Just to give an example, so Elon Musk has been in the news because he's sort of like, everybody open up. And
his son's weird name.
Yeah.
That's
story. Yeah.
The Dash.
I'm not here to defend or attack. I'm just saying, like, I read some news articles of
that's
people
okay.
who, you know, basically used really choice words like, you know, he has now been linked with radical right wing, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wait, what? Just because he wants people to.
Because he wants his plant to reopen.
He wants his plant to reopen.
Oh, and he opened it.
Well, I know
he did.
Yeah, against their wishes. But anyway, you can see how word choice affects how people would think that or think about him, et cetera. So I think there's the news plays off of what people think they're afraid of, which is why different news sources focus on different things, because people are afraid of what they think is the real thing to be afraid of.
Well, you think about just this idea of fear, and we'll get to our question of the day here soon, but that just sparks an interesting rabbit trail we could spend hours on. How much money every year, especially in America, is made in the fear business? Think about it. Your house is going to get broken into. People are going to steal everything they have and you know, kill your family. So you had to buy our alarm system or else you want your family to die. You have to childproof every single thing in your house or else you want your child to die. The background check business. And I'm not against the idea of background checks, but a lot of times they're meant to provide you the idea of security. And they say, if you don't do a background check, this person might be a serial killer you're hiring. And I'm not saying all these things are bad. We have an alarm at our house. You know, we childproof things.
It's not like the Minority Report where it predicts who is going to do the bad thing.
Yes, pre-crime
prediction. It doesn't quite work like that.
It would go so well. But yeah, there is this element of we are going to sell your fears to, or we're going to sell you something that will abate your fears. We had to plant the fear in you, and if you don't buy our product, then you're risking X, X, and X happening.
Right. Well, a lot of that's liability stuff, but yes.
Exactly. But the fear business is a huge market these days. So just don't be afraid of anything and you'll be good to go. All right.
Don't be afraid of anything.
Except clowns. Freaking clowns. Sorry. rabbit trail. We have a student we used to meet with in one of our groups, and she would have this thing called the off-topicometer where she just start waving her finger and it'd be like, off topic. So we need one of those here that just like goes into the red every
like
time we
shock collars.
Yeah, shock maybe collars? Not that extreme. As far as we take it in the side of the mountain. So one of the things we want to talk about today, a segment we've done over the years, that we've had a ton of fun with, is the idea of what we call first world problems. We're familiar with this terminology, and I don't know exactly what the genesis of it was. It may have been the Haiti earthquake in 2011. Because I remember seeing a lot of this after that, this idea of people complaining about things in their lives while the people of Port-au-Prince are literally starving to death in the streets with no means to support themselves. But it helps me to have perspective on what I should be complaining about, what I should be grateful for in life. And I have a 3-year-old home. I had to think about my son's age for a second. Gosh, I almost blew it. Hope my wife isn't watching. But I have a 5- and a 3-year-old, and our 5-year-old, we've had a lot of conversations during the time of quarantine here. He's sad he can't go to school. He's sad he can't see his friends. And this isn't to invalidate the suffering and the pain we're all going through, as we'll talk about here in a little bit as well, that just because somebody else has it worse than you doesn't mean that what you're going through isn't real. I think that's another extreme as well. The old grandparents' guilt trip. Well, when I was your age, we had to walk 17 miles uphill, and there were dragons trying to breathe fire at us.
Gross exaggeration.
Sorry, I dabble in hyperbole. You know, some people. it's my
exaggeration.
Canvas. Dabble or hyperbole.
I know what you mean, though. Basically, okay. You're trying to relate more or less with somebody with their pain, basically, but it's often perceived as like you're trying to invalidate what they're going through.
Exactly.
Because you've had it worse than them.
Exactly. Exactly. It doesn't negate that.
Some people probably mean it that way, but we'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I think so. At the other hand, though, it is nice for me personally to reflect upon the idea of first world problems. Is what I'm complaining about really significant? For example, I once got super upset when my Bluetooth earbuds died, and I was listening to my... I'll oftentimes just like throw on sports radio. I'm getting work done around the house and they're in the middle of this segment and I had to take them out and put in my other set of Bluetooth headphones and I lost like 10 seconds of what they were saying. And I mean the humanity, what is this, the Middle Ages? So it got me thinking about these first world problems and what I wanted to talk about today in relation to everything we're going through since we've all become world-renowned experts in the art of Zoom over the last 2 months. When your Zoom meeting temporarily freezes and you get so angry at your computer, you want to chuck something at it. Because I was thinking about this the other day. We have a lot of meetings that we're a pleasure to be a part of. And I'm thinking we have the technology to see people on the other side of the globe in real time, to see their facial reactions. And yet we can't handle the thought of not having a completely perfect feed or occasionally losing or occasionally having... the sound click out on us. And I've heard it put like this as well in regards to technology, that we have, I hold more technology in the palm of my hand than the astronauts in Apollo 11 took the moon with them. And yet I'm frustrated when it takes me 5 seconds longer than normal to download cat flushing a toilet. So that just got me thinking about other first world problems. I don't know if you guys have any specific that you've encountered over this time, or that this time of lockdown has helped us to appreciate, but I just think it's good sometimes to have perspective on, are the things we're complaining about really that huge of a deal, or because we have the luxury of complaining about them, they seem like a big deal to us? Because we have the luxury to communicate with people around the world in visual format, we have the luxury of complaining about the fact that it's not absolutely perfect.
Well, I think my mind goes to initially, like, are we not allowed to complain about inconveniences because they're first world problems? Because, I mean, you opened with the idea that we often invalidate other people's experiences because it's not as bad as what we went through or happens to us and stuff like that. So, like, I don't know.
Or are going through.
So, yeah, when you compare your meeting on Zoom getting frozen to, like, kids starving in other places of the world or whatever, or your city, mm-hmm. even, and like, yeah, it's like, oh, well, your Zoom meeting's not that important. But, I mean, at the same time, it's kind of like, well, what if my Zoom meeting is, like, my work?
Yeah.
You know, like, what if my Zoom meeting is, like, a teacher trying to communicate with a kid who's, like, not in a great living situation? And like,
yeah.
So now I'm frustrated because my Zoom meeting's not working. And it's not because it's a first world problem. It's because it's, like, directly affecting, like, I mean, we don't freeze in normal conversation, you know, right?
So unless, like, you're William Shatner.
I guess. I don't know.
The master of conversation.
That rap battle makes a lot more sense now. Yeah.
The master of the awkward pause.
Yes.
I don't know why I came into this room.
So
Picard is the best.
You lose a whole bunch of, like, social
moments. Oh, you're
going
to.
Hold on. Wait a minute. You're going to kill. It's like almost saying, like, it's like saying Star Wars Episode 9 was good.
No, it's not. Picard is like, it's like he's the best. The best captain.
Picard,
oh,
or the show Picard.
No, it's the Captain Picard. Oh. Yeah, I mean, well, I haven't seen the new
this
show.
This is my
Picard,
point of reference. It's like this.
Never don't mind. Worry.
It's okay. No, no, you guys hash it out. It's okay.
So anyway, like, I think place. When something happens on your Zoom meeting or your telephone conference call and it's just like nothing's happening, like, the vibe is totally thrown off. And now you have to, like, start over again. Like, can you hear me? What's going on? Oh, technical difficulties. There's no, like, social momentum. There's no, like, atmosphere, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Yeah, it's a first world problem, but sometimes those problems are, like, pretty, like, I feel like they're legitimate a lot of times in the context that we're in. And I don't know that it's fair to compare your Zoom meeting to, you know, poverty, I guess. I don't know. It's just interesting. Why do we need to do that? Except to invalidate your problem.
I think it's a huge perspective is what I'd say, is why it's, you know, when the kids are at home and they're mad that my oldest son has realized that there are other kids who get to play video games all day long. And he's very
get paid for it.
And he's very That's upset true. That he does not. And well, not upset, but I think he's gone through this thing of realizing other people are getting to do that. Why I can't? So there's a sense in which he's losing out.
Yeah.
And so the perspective changers, you know, as we talk about it, what happens when that's all you do all day long? What happens to your work ethic? What happens to your ability to think? What happens to your ability to be social? Do you get vitamin D? Do you get exercise? You know, what other areas of your life are you cultivating? And honestly, like, consider the place in which you're at, which is, so the perspective of looking over at poverty and then saying, wow, you know, you could live in a third world country and this could be your life. It isn't so much to put the third world country down. It's to be like, consider where you're at, consider what you have. And so I think, to me, at least that's the way that I help view it. Or at least I hope I do a good job. Is to help him give him perspective on just what it is that he has, so he can be grateful, because real happiness comes from contentment.
Absolutely,
it does not. It does not come from.
At the same time, I agree. Go
for it.
But so you're in the middle of something and this is a very important thing to you, and then like it's not working and you're frustrated, and then somebody's like, you should be thankful that you have the, even the option to do Zoom meetings. Like, yeah, on the grand scheme of things, I
understand.
Am.
I understand that the
we
ideal
have virtual ability to that's yeah. cool. I like it. I'd like it better if it worked reliably. I'd like it better if it actually, or, you know, like, or something like that. It's
right.
Like, it's not yeah. like I'm if I'm just frustrated in the moment, it's not necessarily that I'm not grateful for the exact like that thing. Right.
It doesn't invalidate your gratitude.
And it's sort of
you have
another.
Ability.
It's like yes. yeah. It's like another kind of blanket thing that like, oh well, if you're frustrated with this specific context, you must not be thankful for the ability to do it at all. Which is
absolutely.
Like, well, that's not even, that's a non sequitur. That's not even logical. Like, why would you jump to that conclusion? Like, if I don't know, like, and you're taking one isolated incident and you're just applying it to my entire belief system or my entire comp, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not mutually exclusive. And that's,
perspective
again,
is good, though. I mean, it is good to have perspective and be like, yeah, it's actually pretty amazing that this happened not 5 years ago.
Oh, goodness. Or 100 years ago, being isolated, during the Spanish flu. Yeah. Shifting gears a little bit, developing this idea of Zoom, I think it's been fascinating. So, again, we work with groups of a lot of different people in our lines of work, and some of those groups have actually seemed to thrive more in the online platform. Not all, but some, as they feel more comfortable behind a computer screen than in person. Majority, I would say, it's still more of a burden. There's a lack of energy. There's a lack of real, true human connection, which both my experience as a human being and my experience as a Christ follower has instilled in me this idea that it's what we were made for, and that a computer screen or a phone call or some form of digital representation, while better than nothing, your ability to still stay connected and still receive information on how each other are doing, is certainly better than complete isolation. It's absolutely not a substitute.
Right. No, that makes sense, too. It's like it's nice to have, and it's better than nothing, but it's not the most ideal.
And that, yes, and that leads me into this article I read the other day on The Federalist. And again, our goal here in light of these COVID times isn't to take a stand and say if you believe X, Y, or Z, then you're completely wrong. It's once again, it's such a nuanced, complicated situation. But I think this author made a good point, and I wish I had it in front of me. I'd give them credit. I'll send it out later if I find it. They're talking about the point that for those who are championing the lockdowns to extend further, championing this idea that of staying home as long as we need, how they frame this narrative that people in support of opening the economy and trying to get society back to normal are only interested in making more money. Their only concern is either money or their own personal well-being of,
yeah, they have a haircut.
Yeah, F you. I want a haircut. So let grandma die. That's how the narrative is getting framed. Unfortunately, there's some really stupid people who are literally using that argument. Very, very small minority. But anyway, long story short, this article pointed out the fact that, and they weren't even taking a position. They said, we can't reduce this down to just monetary value. There is, there's more moral virtue in life from, and he was talking about it from a biblical perspective, but I think, you know, you don't even have to be a person of faith to recognize this. There's more moral virtue in life than simply staying biologically alive. Yes, human life. Yes, not allowing people to suffer biological death is, you know, arguably the highest moral virtue this side of heaven. But it's not the only one. And the Bible makes that clear. And he just said that, and I'll wrap up here. He talked about how, you know, for example, a small business is about to go under, a family business they started. That's not just a source of income for them. You know, that's a sense of pride. That's a sense of dignity. That's, in many cases, maybe something that they built from the ground up and represents years and years of hard work they're about to lose. The idea of social interaction.
It's actually even more than that. Go ahead and finish.
Well, no, I just said the idea of social interaction. It's more than just, I'm bored, I want to get out. It's, we are missing that which we were made for of human interaction.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's also just, there's some really practical things here. When someone loses a business, let's say they put everything they ever had into that business. Now they're destitute.
Yeah.
By what means are you going to help them elevate themselves back up to a, so, you know, the whole, I think no matter what, clearly we're going to get into the whole, should we reopen or not reopen, et cetera. But I think it seems like there's a polarization of you either A, want everybody to die because you want to reopen,
yes.
which is an extreme, and it's unfair because I don't think that's what people want. Then there's the, you know, oh, well, you got to stay locked down. But that's, you know, for someone who's literally about to lose everything, you're not in that situation, you know. You can't just go and say, well, that person's selfish and doesn't care about other people. You actually need to go and say, and then the other extreme is, you know, they just want to keep us locked down and take away our rights and yada, yada, yada. I think there's a very fair...
Like a quadrant, actually, of like...
Well, it I mean...
areas you could go.
And
well, that's because...
middle with a little bit of...
That's issue. Because there are competing values. Is there a way that you can do something which upholds both values in a way that's responsible? I believe the answer to that is yes. The question really comes down to whether you believe people are smart enough and capable enough to do it. Like, you know, are we able to fully, you know, sanitize? Because in my mind, it seems pretty obvious that if people were just getting it like crazy, it seems like everyone at Costco would have it because it's one of the few stores where everybody goes to, right? And so I think there's ways you can have a response.
I feel like I'm going to catch something every time I go to Walmart, regardless of whether there's an outbreak or not.
Right. But I think there's got to be a healthy discussion. And this is the key. As soon as you've come to the conclusion without the discussion, yeah. then there's no, like, the idea that what we're losing is the ability to have a middle ground discussion mm-hmm. where you could compromise on both views and say, hey, you know what? I'm willing to let you reopen if you can fully do these things. Can you do those things for me? They might be a little repressive, but you're going to be able to open your business. Yes, you can. Okay, great. Let's do that. And that's in the general interest of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, if we're supposed to make decisions on what's the best for everybody, there needs to be some of that conversation. I don't think people who want to reopen their business are trying to go out and get everybody killed.
Or only care about their 401k.
The thing that I don't get talked about, like, one of the aspects that I found illuminating in, like, my own research is the idea that, like, you know, there are millions of kids that live in what, you know, would be classified as food insecure homes already, pre-outbreak, right?
Yeah.
There are millions of kids that don't have good social interactions outside of school. There are lots of families that already struggle because they live paycheck to paycheck. There's lots of people that struggle with depression and then suicide as a result of those types of things already pre-outbreak. There's a lot of things that, like, not being able to work affects besides just getting money. Sometimes it's the difference of, I mean, I've been in a situation where if I had to go home early, I didn't get any money for that week and I got paid weekly. So then it's 2 weeks where I have no money, you know, so hopefully we stocked up or something, right? You know, and like, that's the reality for millions of Americans who, you know, they live paycheck to paycheck. They don't have any more than like $500 saved, if that. They're not prepared for an economic crisis like that. We saw unemployment like hit new records for this, like people filing all at the same time. So opening the economy is not just people wanting to get, you know, their money back or get a haircut. Opening the economy is like the difference between life and death for some people. So we're not just, I think on both sides of the spectrum, we're weighing life and death from the people that are susceptible that might catch it and the people that are going to be in a really bad situation if the economy doesn't open up soon. So, yeah, I think there has to be some sort of, like, we can figure this out. There might need to be regulations, like Richard said.
Well, I just think you have to have a fair discussion on that.
Yeah, it's got
to
be a discussion, not just like a, nope.
Or token input, like, oh, yeah, come tell us what you think. And we already have our mind made up anyway what we're going to do.
Right. And I think it's disingenuous and disingenuous.
Disingenuous.
Okay, sweet. I got the word right.
You're misleading intentionally.
Well, I think to assume, I think it's always disingenuous to assume evil intent. I mean, like, it's not fair when you're sitting there being like, you know, oh, hey, you just want this to happen. That's not what, you know, that's disingenuous.
Versus, hey, have you considered this?
Yeah,
I think,
you know,
your position
and we are losing the ability to have those kinds of discussions. And actually, I personally think that it's technology, because when you leave a comment, you can just blast somebody, right? And you're
you
can
hide behind your screen
those
and
people.
Your alias.
And I'd love to say I haven't been guilty of this, but I have. That's why I don't do anything on social media anymore, because it's pointless. Like, nobody listens. No. Nobody has a reasonable conversation. The art of face-to-face dialogue, you don't sit across from somebody, even that you disagree with, and be like, you, whatever, insert it. People like to do that.
To teleconferencing on CNN.
It's easier behind a computer screen when they can't reach out and punch you.
Yeah, exactly.
And so there's this dialogue of
also
like
Fox News. I hate them too.
Yeah.
Well, they're just picking up wherever CNN leaves off behind, or they're just picking up on the.
Daniel's more of an InfoWars guy.
You know? Yeah, those chemtrails, man. I can see them.
Oh, stop it. Anyway, we do not believe in chemtrails here. Just that's a joke. That's a joke. Okay. The point is
disclaimer,
reasonable, fair dialogue. Reasonable, fair dialogue. And I think that's being lost. And so when we look at an ad or we look at something shared on Facebook and we agree with it and then we reshare it, Facebook has an algorithm to reinforce the things that you already look at. And so you're not being open, you know, this idea of open-mindedness. Well, open-mindedness means looking at other people's ideas and considering them and weighing them. And it seems like the media does a really good job of labeling things already. And
it's much easier than actually.
Well, once you label something as bad, then you're like, oh, I'm going to stay away from that. Yeah. Just think of all the labels they use. They use all sorts of labels to help you filter out. But that doesn't develop reasonable dialogue. And what you end up seeing, like when people come on shows sometimes, you know, and they're like, what's the right word? They're ambushed. You know, they'll talk about things they didn't agree to talk about, or they're disingenuous, or they'll try to misrepresent their opinion. That's not fair, and it's not good dialogue. It doesn't lead to further understanding, and it doesn't.
So what you're saying is,
exactly.
Well, that's why somebody like Joe Rogan. There's a lot of people who can't stand him because they feel as though he doesn't confront people. They're like, you should call him out for that ridiculous viewpoint. He actually just wants to hear, even if he doesn't agree with
it. He lets people speak.
He lets people speak.
He has Bernie Sanders on, and then he'll have somebody else.
He'll have Andrew Yang.
Yeah. He'll just, but he lets people speak.
Can you imagine, though?
He spoke weed with him, didn't he?
Can we? Yeah, he did. I mean, I if I could just share the room with a billionaire, like, man, my life.
It just rubs off on you. Like,
I mean, it's like, I want to be in the presence of your money. I mean,
can you just bring like stacks of dollar bills?
Well, you have to remember this is another thing. Net worth is not the same thing as cash worth.
Yeah. I know.
So,
I
mean, you know, net worth is once you cash out.
Speaking of that, I random aside, but
you're less rich. Also,
that's
suddenly
correct.
Yeah. There was a conversation the other day on how much, like, what's the most cash you've ever actually seen in a room. And I, through some research, I was able to determine that for every man, woman, and child in America, there's only $5,700 of actual printed cash. So, essentially, if everybody, I mean, it'd be like a Great Depression. If everybody wanted to pull their money out of the bank, we'd be beyond screwed. Think about that.
Correct. That's because they lend one, it's one of four, one of seven. I could probably be wrong on that.
I think they're only required to have 10% of actual assets.
Yeah, there's a certain low value amount. So,
well, the FDIC insures it. Giant cards. So.
Well, yeah, they're lower looking. Well, hey, we can just print more. We just printed $3 trillion, you know.
Yeah, which causes massive inflation, lowers
the
power of your money.
We're in the weeds.
What are we actually supposed to be talking about right now?
Actually? Well, actually, so this does transition a little bit into our cliche of the day, our second favorite segment. I hate cliche. And this speaks again to the oversimplification of complicated issues. There is nothing worse than a trite cliche answer to a serious issue. And
I know we're all in the same boat.
Yeah, we're all in the same. Well, yeah. Or we're all in this together. Oh. Is the common one. The boat illustration is interesting because then we're all in the same storm. We're not all in the same boat. But I just, you know, I've realized the solution to this whole COVID crisis is one more billionaire celebrity going on Instagram from their mansion and telling us, we're all in this together, man. We're going to get through it.
Just stay home.
Yeah, just stay home and have your nine servants. Well, they had to cut down again to only nine servants to stay under the 10-person limit.
I don't think you can call them servants, Gary.
Yeah, I don't think that's
paid,
PC.
Paid servants?
Paid staff. Okay.
Paid staff. All right.
So here, so I'm going to press back a little bit. So, I mean, you guys find this cliche.
We're all in this together. I mean,
I actually think that, like, that means well. I actually appreciate the cliche because I think if it can be done right,
or the fortune
Hallmark
cookie industry.
The fortune. Good things coming for you today. The cliche of the day, like we're all in this together. I think that's actually I think it's a good thing because I think it's true. Like, everyone's affected by everyone else's decisions and policies. And the problem is sometimes maybe what you're referring to is that it's used as a way to say, agree with me, because we're all, or it's a way to, when two people are having valid, important disagreement, that it's a way to be like, oh, well, let's not like fight about it. Like, maybe that's what it is. But if the perspective is, hey guys, we really are all Americans. We all do live in the same country. We all operate on the same roads. Like, we are.
And everybody's affected, no matter how much you have or don't have.
And if we were able to compromise, right? Not my way or the highway, but if we were able to compromise, maybe that would be an important thing to say about we're all in this together.
Well, I think it's intent. I think it's the intent with which you use it. If you use it from the intent of that you're trying to persuade somebody to do or think the way that you want them to, then I feel like that's not great. However, if you do have an intent that's like, hey, we could help each other. I'm next to you. This is your boat. This is my boat. Let's, you know, we're all this together. Let's work together. You know, so intent and motive, I think, are probably your determining factors.
Well, and I think, too, with cliche, it's not that they're untrue. It's that it's incomplete.
You should probably talk closer to your mic.
It's an oversimplification because, yes, we are all in this together. But
pull your mic back so we can keep the distance. There you go.
Hello now. Oh, now I can stretch out. This is glorious. So, yeah, cliches aren't cliches because they're not true, because they're a complete lie. They're a cliche because they, again, try to oversimplify more nuanced and complicated
cliche
situation.
Was memes before memes were memes.
That's true.
The cliche is a literal actual
meme. I don't know if I'd say
meme.
A cliche is a lie, but I mean, it's...
No,
it's,
I didn't say, no, I didn't say it's, I said it's
it
not a lie.
It's not a lie. Oh, okay. No, cliche is not...
But it's just... It's a
widespread, oversimplification. Easily understood and easily transferable idea, which is what a meme is, and that predates the internet.
What he said.
So. Well, memes are fun because there's an extra layer. A meme is visual, so you can visually and
the best way I can think of as a meme is it's a zip file for your brain. It's got a lot of things and it downloads into your brain and then you unzip it. It's got layers. It's like, but it's easily transferable. And so you see a picture and you see the text or you see the GIF, and it's all packaged. But then it's got like, and then all of a sudden, don't,
Garrett,
I will fight you.
Covers your mouth. Perfectly.
Sorry. Literally. No, I'm honestly, it is
well,
GIF, right?
Creator says GIF, but it like stands the peanut for butter. Graphics. Yeah, it stands for graphics.
Because choosy moms choose GIF. You're welcome, GIF.
So it's not.
We'll accept our royalties anytime.
So now we go to the ad break. Yeah. I wish.
Oh,
okay.
Great.
Anyway, so anyway, memes are fun and they're cool. And cliches are just easily transferable pieces of information.
I approve of that picture.
Oh my!
I approve of that.
Just because you gave us
No! It has nothing to do with my ethnicity.
Don't yell into the mic.
Has nothing to do with my ethnicity. I just approve of that.
We should.
My yaya lives just on the other side of the Parthenon, right over there. Right,
I'll go get
there.
A gyro from her next time I'm there. With some tzatziki.
You would be a hero to her if you did that.
So that actually, we should probably go back to the beginning and explain what the Agora even is for those who might be wondering or who didn't.
It's the place in Greece where they argued about life, politics, philosophy. Yeah. Everyone came with different viewpoints and no one was pushed away.
I thought that was church. Wait, hold on. Never mind. Wrong era.
No, nobody's ever pushed away. So the Agora, well, the literal trans.
Okay, hold on. I want to get...
The literal translation of the Agora is marketplace in the Greek language. But it was a forum for examining ideas, for discussion, for social and civil interaction. So the term agoraphobia is someone who's afraid to leave their apartment, afraid to go out in public, and afraid of others, afraid of the unfamiliar. And we believe, again, in embracing the unfamiliar and freely exchanging ideas, not, you know, behind a computer screen, which is ironic because that's how you're viewing us at this moment. But we also do this out with people in public where we can be seen, not tucked away a room. What'd you say?
We did,
yes. Yes, that's true, when we could actually look face-to-face at each other. So we will again someday, we assure you all, when COVID is a thing of the past. So, all right, so cliches, what's our consensus, yay or nay? Do we reach a consensus? They just are.
Are we voting on?
And there are no. Yeah, we should vote on whether cliches are allowed.
No more cliches, guys.
Okay, last point.
The end of the line for that.
All right. We'll move on. We'll have. If you have any cliches that bug you, by the way, you're welcome to comment in on it, and we'll submit it. We do one each week along with our first
one. I want to read some of the best. Hold on here. Let me.
Okay.
These.
And after this, we're going to go to our viral exam segment. These cliches
sum up everything you need to know about life. All right. Let's see if they list them.
In only
people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Where do they get the stones?
By the way? I don't know. But I think that's not a bad one.
Shouldn't throw stones?
Laughter is the best medicine. See, I'm good. I'm down with that. Down with laughter is the best medicine.
Technically,
because laughter is a
the medicine, the dopamine released from it is. The
I know, but it actually like your outlook on life, outlook on life actually has a great effect on health and everything. The early bird catches the worm.
Yeah, but the second mouse gets the cheese. Let that sink in.
The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. That's a cliche, apparently.
Yeah.
Old habits die hard. Is always
greener. Yeah.
Yeah.
Old habits die hard. I like that one, actually. I mean, I think that's true. Established habits, I can't remember what the research is. You have to do it like so many number of times.
It's like 10 times longer to break a habit or something than it is to form it. Numbers,
math.
It's like
when my kids ask me, why do I have to brush my teeth? It's like, because eventually when you don't think about it, I'll know you'll do it every day.
Yeah.
A picture is worth 1,000 words. It's probably true. Mm-hmm.
A video is worth 1,000 pictures.
A watched pot never boils. What? That makes no sense to me.
No, that means if you just sit and watch and wait, nothing will happen.
You probably don't have any experience with this, but sometimes I'll put a pot on the stove and I want it to boil and I don't have anything else to do, and so I wait for it to boil, and it feels like it takes a lot longer while I'm waiting for it than it does if I just went and did something else.
It still
else.
Boils. It says a watched pot never boils.
It's a perceptive thing, not a... You thought,
I would go ahead and kill that one.
Well, Richard's heart is so cold, to be fair, cold and dead, by even being in proximity with the pot, it may lower the temperature below boiling. So
again, dabbling in hyperbole, thank you. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
It's fair.
Especially in our postmodern society.
It's fair.
What is beauty?
That'd be an interesting discussion. So do we have any sort of universally accepted standards of beauty? Speaking of which, this leads down a rabbit trail. No, we're not going to go there.
I'm still reading. I'm still reading. Hold on.
It was the
when
reverse
the going
fat
gets
shaming.
Tough, the tough get going. I think that's fair. That's a fair cliche.
I don't know. Sometimes we assume the tough get going. What if the tough are like, dude, I've gone enough. I'm good.
Then they're not tough.
Well, by definition.
Definition.
That's an interesting
beat. Circular reasoning.
No, sure. I mean, there's so much circular
reasoning. Okay, we can agree that cliches have value, but... I think we can also agree
that...
I don't
think you're going to get rid of a cliche.
No, you're not. They're there for a reason.
When you're writing, you shouldn't use cliches.
Opposites attract. Every cloud has a silver lining. Don't cry over spilled milk. Actually, you know, honestly...
My son literally cried over spilled milk the other day. I couldn't help but laugh.
My wife has said this to me lots of times. Don't cry over spilled milk. I actually do think it's inappropriate because it's something like in my life, I've had to learn what things are really appropriate to get upset about or cry over and what things aren't.
Yeah.
The calm before the storm. Laughter is the best medicine. Love you more than life itself.
Milk, but if you spill my coffee, like
spill
my son
beer.
Did this
I was frightened to death.
I'd lose my mind.
All right.
Let's move on.
We are, yeah. We are knee deep in this, and we still got our entire question to get through. But that's okay. We don't have a time limit. We can literally do this all day as long as we have families or anything to go home to. Oh, wait. I have to come up with an excuse. Hope you're not watching this, dear. So, moving on. And again, if you guys have any thoughts you'd like to share with us, any particular cliches or first world problems that you think we should discuss, feel free to comment in the comment section. As well as with a next segment, what we like to call the viral exam. This is where we like to take a particular meme hashtag that's been going around on the social media, on that internet thing I've been hearing about. Social meds, yeah. And dissect it. Again, this idea of taking a complicated situation, oversimplifying it. So one that's been really popular, I've seen it probably half a dozen times people post it. And again, we're not here to say which side of the fence you should be on, even though there's a particular theme you might see today in regards to our view of the lockdowns. But one I found interesting, it's a picture of a parade in Philadelphia from, it's either the summer of 1918 or 1919. But it was shortly before the second wave of the Spanish flu hit, which is actually the more deadly wave of the three different waves. And it shows, I think it was 200,000 people that had gathered for a big celebration in downtown Philadelphia with the thought that the flu is gone, we can all go back out and celebrate now. And their site is this example because then they had one of the most massive spikes of any city in the nation, and they had a huge, huge death rate in the second wave compared to other cities that stayed on lockdown. So this is being presented as an argument for continuing the lockdowns. And again, I'm not even saying that you know, it's a terrible policy, but I think this is, again, another example of taking a very complicated, very nuanced situation and saying, well, because of this, we should clearly do this without considering all the other factors. And rather than spending 10 hours every day responding to all these different memes on all different sides that I disagree with, when I see them, I have to fight that urge. I realize it's not worth engaging in, but talking about stuff like this in person, somebody who, and I know many of my dear friends personally who posted this particular meme or similar memes, I'd love to have a very nuanced conversation with. I mean, just a few things to consider: the fact that A, the Spanish flu, the death rate was about 10%, which by even some of the most liberal standards is about 10 times higher than we have for COVID. Secondly, nobody's advocating 200,000 people all cramming together with no sanitary measures in a few city blocks. I'm not, at least. If you guys are, let me know. If somebody's looking to throw the party of the century. And also the measures that we have to combat, to treat, and to effectively combat from a medical perspective the dangers of the virus today are immensely more. And we had virtually no understanding what a virus even was in 1918 or 1919, let alone how to treat it. So all that to say that using that extreme out there example as a reason for why we must continue the lockdowns now is what I would say an insufficient, incomplete, and faulty example. So that's one in particular that's been going around that caught my eye. I don't know if you guys have seen any memes going around these days or any hashtags that are catching fire that you'd love to respond to and love to have a dialogue with the creator of. But that was one that just caught my eye. I'm not as up to date as some.
I've seen less, actually, in the last week or so.
I guess that's a good sign.
I've seen less like memes and stuff that are just like oversimplifying it. I don't know. Sometimes people share them in spite, as in like they're making fun of the idea that they represent. So I don't have a problem with that. Mm. I do have like there's issues that I come up with like when people are sharing them, like I said before, as in like this is a thing that proves my point.
Mm.
It's like it's a picture.
Yeah.
Usually I just laugh at memes. That's my
what I want to do to memes. But when it's like, you know, a meme about statistics, you know, or something like that, it's like, don't do that. Like,
if they're actually wrong,
especially when it's actually so. One that goes I've seen around is it's the worldwide death toll, and it lists all the death tolls, and it has COVID at the top, and it's like 49,000. I'm like, no, that was like the U.S. death toll like 2 weeks ago. That's not the worldwide death toll.
I haven't
toll.
Seen that. Yeah.
So I don't know. It's like and
where it literally is black and white that hey, that data is wrong.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, especially if you're like, yeah. And so like, I don't know. And so. There's that kind of stuff. And there's one I keep seeing around, like, I don't remember what it was. I keep ignoring it, but it's like the picture of like the kids in black and white from like a long time ago.
Oh yeah. The during the depression, the kids starving.
Yeah. On I don't the know farm, what it's about though. Maybe it was, it's not that I'm not seeing more. Maybe it's that I'm just ignoring them better.
Well, that one had a story to it that was attached. Yeah, I know which one you speak. It was this again, this idea of, you know, you don't really have it that bad. Think about it. Yeah. Well, and I heard Greg Norman, the golfer, who I enjoy, and I got nothing against, he had a tweet which I don't know if he invented or not, but was credited to him. Do we have technical difficulties?
I just can't use my phone when the picture's awake.
Yeah, so it'll be. No people devices, got the idea. Anyway, he had this tweet that went viral which said, you know, our grandparents' generation was called upon to travel across the world and risk their lives in combat to save the world from Nazism. And I'm paraphrasing here, but this is the general sentiment of it. He says, we're being called to sit on the couch, watch TV, and wash our hands. And he said, don't F this up, basically. And again, there's a perspective of, well, you shouldn't complain because, you know, this generation had so much worse. And I'm not trying to invalidate. I would much rather go through COVID than World War II. Can we agree? Yeah. I mean, I think that there nobody's going to dispute you on that. But again, that's not the entire point. There's more to the story that just because somebody else had it worse than we do doesn't mean that maybe there are steps being taken here that are unnecessary in the burden that they're putting on people's lives, even if that burden is much lower than the burden that my grandparents' generation endured during World War II, both those who fought in the front lines in some cases, but even those still are here who stayed on the home front. So anyway, again, Facebook, it has its purpose, but it's a terrible place to have real serious dialogue about serious issues. But it's a place to link your favorite YouTube shows that do talk about serious issues. Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Yeah. Stuff and things.
I love stuff and things.
Yeah. So what was your point in bringing up the article about the like, so, I mean, expand on that. Like, what are you trying to get?
Which article?
The article? I thought you were talking about a meme.
Well, the meme. Are you talking about the article? Well, you started out talking about the article.
Oh, the parade in Philadelphia. Yeah. Oh, just this idea that...
Because the way I've heard that shown is that it was a story of two cities. One city did a lockdown.
Philly and St. Louis, yeah.
And the other one didn't. And so the lessons learned from that.
Yeah, and again, there's an element of truth to that where they could say, hey, there's a valid argument of saying, hey, if we end this too early, this is what could happen. I would just make the case that... That particular example is a poor example to use, and it's an incomplete example because of all this. That assumes that, again, we don't have the ability. That assumes the same death toll, the same rate of death that you had with the Spanish flu, and that assumes that you're going to have 200,000 people gathered together in public, and that's not what people are saying. So it's a much different situation than to say that if we lift the lockdown, we're going to have this massive spike like Philadelphia had. Which is what people are implying.
Like, well, maybe, but probably not.
It seems inherent that if you lift it, you are going to have an increased number of cases. Mm-hmm.
Although Georgia hasn't really, neither has Florida.
Time will tell.
It's a two-week incubation period.
The issue is, can we find a way to do it that doesn't completely obliterate our country
and
people's livelihood?
Exactly.
We're gonna mitigate to the best possible rate that we can the cases. Because I think, I mean, as far as I saw a research thing from Apple saying that 35% of Americans are not staying home. They're going all over the place.
Which is terrifying that Apple's tracking us.
Like, well, Google's of course they are. Too. But
that's true.
They're not publicly, like, they weren't saying this person went here. They're just saying, showing where everyone's going and everything else like that. Google's keeping track of it because if you're using Google Maps, I mean, if you don't want people to track you, throw your phone in the garbage, and that it's part of the.
But I think we should have a conspiracy theory segment.
No, we should not have a conspiracy theory.
Flat, you know what's awesome? Flat Earth, conspiracy theories. You never have to actually prove a thing. You just have to keep questioning.
You have to just draw broad correlations between one thing and another.
Yeah.
Like, I remember probably the worst, when somebody in my family told me that there were these towers all over the world, and it proved that the Illuminati were controlling everybody, because you can find the same structural
power. They're listening.
Anyway. Not rational.
Do you want to walk to the edge of the Earth later?
No.
And throw a coin into space?
No edge of the Earth.
No, because the ice wall...
Oh, there's an ice wall? Oh,
yes,
dang
it. Antarctica. It's an ice wall.
Sorry, I forget about the ice wall.
We're moving upwards. Wait, is that really what the flat?
A lot of them, yeah. Like, Antarctica is not like one solid landmass. It's like it's actually an ice wall around the Earth, and then it's like it kind of keeps everything inside.
We do not endorse this.
Hey.
We would be happy to have someone come on if they wish to talk about it, but I do not have any.
That's what creates gravity. No, because we're moving.
No.
Up.
Oh, okay.
Because we're
moving up, and that keeps the atmosphere like a dome over.
But why don't we feel the wind pressing down on us?
No, because of the atmosphere, the ozone layer, and all that.
But if that was the force pulling you down, you would feel the wind like when you move through it.
There are flat earthers all around the world.
It's got giant fans underneath it that's sucking the air down through it like a giant AC cooling device.
No. We all have magnets in our feet, and they just
need to find the thermostat to change the temperature of the world.
I had a point that I wanted to make.
Oh, we all had points. We haven't even got to our question of the day. Maybe we should do that at some point. Is the world getting better or worse? What do you think?
Better
than what?
Than any other point in time in history.
Is it better than yesterday?
Okay, let's do a timeline of 100 years because we love base 10.
Better than like pre-Cambrian explosion?
I don't know. The trilobites had it pretty sweet before all these other mammals started popping on the scene.
All right.
Is the world better than it was?
Yes, it was. So there's two things I would point you to. I'm very strongly convinced of this. If you disagree, you can totally disagree. But what I would tell you to go look up is a man named Hans Rosling, who's died. His son has picked up his work.
Does he have the two little dots above the O? Because I love those.
I think so, when it's actually spelled not in English.
When it's spelled in Swedish.
Yeah, when it's spelled in Swedish. And then there's a guy, another man named Steven Pinker, who's a neuroscientist at MIT. And he's followed up with some of this work as well. I think he also wrote a book on it. But Hans Rosling wrote a book called Factfulness, kind of like mindfulness or thankfulness, right? Factfulness. Mm-hmm. And he basically tracks 100-plus years of data on every conceivable topic. The number of women educated in the world versus men, it's almost equal. How many people have been vaccinated? I mean, how many people die of natural disasters? How many people die of other diseases like that have been eradicated? So, yes, some diseases pop up here and there, but for the most part, you know, it just goes on and on, like life expectancy per country, the average income per individual adjusted for inflation is way higher than it was in the 1970s. He shows how the congregation of wealth looks worldwide. I mean, just the... I could go on and on and on and on and on. However you measure it. However you measure it, I think that so he has this thing that says like 16 bad things that are decreasing, and like leaded gasoline's gone down,
like disco.
Battle deaths are way down.
Rapping.
The expense of solar panels is minuscule. HIV infections way down. Oil spills way down. Legal slavery is almost non-existent anymore compared to how many countries it was legal in 100 years ago. Death penalty is almost, it's way down, not non-existent, but ozone depletion, it's getting better. Hunger, less hunger in the world. Smoke particles, smallpox is basically eradicated. Deaths from disaster, nuclear arms, child labor, plane crash deaths. All going down. And those are
and
the
other
things.
Numbers as well.
Okay, well, what about systemic racism, Richard?
That's a loaded question.
Is that a what? Because I assume that there's systemic.
No, that's just a loaded. Because to unpack that would take more time than we have here.
Okay. Can you agree? I think while we can admit that it's not perfect and it's not where it should be, being a person of color in America is a little bit better now than it was 100 years ago. Just
I'm not even
slightly better. Sorry, we're not allowed to speak on that. I realize.
I don't know.
But I think there's an old saying that, it's a cliche.
We can talk about it. We just need to have the adequate time to.
Yeah, which we don't today. There's a cliche, ironically, but it goes that perfect is the enemy of better. And I think that that is very poignant when we look at is the world getting better or worse? That because it's not perfect, because we have the luxury now in many cases, because we're not simply so worried about making it through another day. I mean, you think about that. The idea that as societies advance, we have the luxury of being angry and being frustrated about things we didn't have the luxury even 100 years ago, where it's like, I don't have time to deal with this. I had to worry about how I'm going to get food to survive the day. I had to worry about how I'm going to keep a roof over my head. And that's not to invalidate the fact that, as Daniel mentioned, there's food insecurity still today. There's housing insecurity. But we have the luxury of being able to argue about these things. And because something's not perfect, we lose sight of the fact that, hey, it has gotten a lot better than it has, or than it was.
Yeah, I mean, to me, if you look at the facts, it's pretty simple. Yeah. The world has gotten better. Is it perfect? No. Is there still
But we
bad
hear about
happening?
Everything so much more.
Yeah, but as we said earlier, that's because that's what gets people to fear
cells.
Fear cells versus...
Well, one of my favorite examples of that is the stranger danger mentality, that every single person on the playground is trying to abduct your children. You know, you can't let them out of your sight for 2 seconds, even though stats have shown that 91% of crimes against children are perpetrated by somebody they know and trust.
That's terrifying.
It is. Well, and that's, I mean, if you want to say that's terrifying, but this is the idea of there's this narrative created that everybody out there is, you know, trying to do X, Y, and Z because you hear about it every single time it happens. In real time, for the most part. I mean, I was just on Facebook yesterday, it was blowing up with the fact that I-84 shut down east of Troutdale because they were in a shootout with a murder suspect, basically. And as it was happening, you're getting these live updates of everybody on the scene, because that's the responsible thing to do when you're in the middle of a life or death situation. It's not to run away. It's to take out your phone and live stream, of course.
Well, funny. Yeah. I don't know. Whatever.
I don't know.
Sorry.
So I feel like in every conceivable way, you know, there's the laws are better than they were 100. I would say in some areas, in the major ones, especially to do with like equality and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Representation.
Representation. So I definitely think like from 100 years ago, things are better. Air travel is safer. There's less gun deaths than there were 30 years ago. Less violent crime, it's all much lower. So to me, it seems like a pretty cut and dry. And I have a high confidence in that people given the opportunity to discuss and talk about things can make things better, not worse.
It is interesting how people pine about, oh, I miss the good old days so often. It's like, well, how good was it
really?
That's
a cognitive bias.
I mean, I think there's an element of each generation will be the generation that says, oh, you know, things are going to hell in a handbasket. And these kids today, they just don't realize what they're doing. And
I'm pretty
there's
sure
a lack
that's
of understanding.
What's being been said since kids have existed.
Yeah, although I will
mean,
say
because
this.
If you believe in the biblical narrative, the first instance of kids is them murdering each other.
So well, yeah, that didn't start
I
out
mean,
well, the whole sibling
Of course,
thing.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense for the older generation to be like, oh, my gosh, these kids are so dumb and stupid. They're just killing you. I mean, you know, the Tide Pods and, the, you know, everything like
oh.
that. But, you know, honestly, it's like it's been going on for so long. We would have figured it out by now that, like, yeah, people can be dumb, but, like, we're still here. So, you know, maybe it's not
true.
Really
maybe
as
off, yeah.
bad as we it looks like it is, you know what I mean? And so, like, and also as you bring up the statistics of things, like, all these other bad things are going away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything to rebut it. Like, what about the increase of da-da-da-da-da? I mean, you know, I didn't come with that. But, you know, I think that the point being that a lot of it's just cognitive bias. Mm-hmm. We remember it. We remember things fondly because of the sentiment yeah. and the feelings associated with things like that.
That
and then
true.
Every time we re-access memories in our brains, we recontextualize that memory on a neuroscientific level to the fact that, you know, sometimes what we remember is just what we wanted it to be
yes.
in a lot of ways. And so we have fond memories of things and we have nostalgia and stuff like that, but it's not, we don't have like photographic memories in the masses. That might be a thing for some people, but we don't remember things as accurately as we feel like we do. And this has been shown over and over again in psychology and neuroscience that our memory is not really the greatest thing that we have going for us a lot of times. And I think as you get older, you know, that's going to, like, the distance between the event and you recalling it is going to affect that immensely, too. So,
exactly.
The whole, like, the good old days and the kids these days thing is just, like, can we just get over that? Can we
yeah.
move past that now or not?
I mean,
I don't know.
I would hope so. Although I will say, in defense of the older generations, because I'm quickly becoming get off my lawn guy. I literally had to tell kids to get off my lawn the other day. They were nice about it.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. We live next to a park, and people cut across it sometimes to get there. So
yeah.
I literally had to be that guy.
These days.
I know. And all the stuff I swore I would never say to my kids, and my dad said to me that I thought was so dumb and pointless. I'm saying it to me because I said so. Anyway. So I realize I'm becoming that. I think. In this day and age, it is a little bit tougher because of the rapid rise of technology. A generation, how you define it, it's rapidly shrinking in the time frame, where from even somebody born a decade after another person, just the world they live in, how much radically different it is versus 100 years. If you're born 1900 versus 1910, it was essentially the same world in a much more real sense than somebody born in 2000 versus 2010. Today, if that makes sense. So,
no, I mean,
so I think there's an element of generations are shifting fast.
The rapid pace of technological advancement
yes.
is definitely changing the landscape of the world at a rate that has been unprecedented
Absolutely.
In human history up until this point. So the fact is that we are all trying to cope with stuff changing every year, every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like you get one cell phone and it lasts you for 10 years. You know, like your old Nokia brick.
You know, it doesn't last that long.
I love
long
my
anymore.
Zach Morris phone. It was great. You could run a truck over it and it didn't break.
Even the batteries, like the way we have our batteries designed, they don't even last that long. So even if you wanted to keep it for 5 years, you're going to start running into issues where like it's not compatible with other technology. It doesn't last as long on a charge and stuff like that. And so like that's just the world we live in.
It's not advantageous to do so.
And so, you know, what's interesting about how this, you brought up the Zoom meeting thing, all the economy kind of shutting down, or at least the social interaction part shutting down, has forced so many people that would have never picked up a laptop or a Zoom meeting or a Google Hangouts or something to wade into this world that they have been trying to purposely ignore.
The technophobes.
For 10 years or so. And then it's just like, how do I do this? And it seems pretty straightforward to me, you know, like, I don't know, I'm just immersed in it. I get it. And I'm probably more.
It also makes it harder for you to teach because it's
intuitive
so
to me.
Obvious.
Yeah. And then like a lot of times it's like you get asked these questions and it's like, well, you got to do this. But just doing this is not one step. It's actually like 10 steps. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's just like I know it all is just, I just do the thing. I just turn the microphone on. But sometimes that means opening your sound setting. Sometimes it means allowing things to go through your firewall. Sometimes it means, you know, just getting one simple thing to work isn't the same as it used to be. And so, you know, yeah, I think there is a little legitimacy to the fact that, like, geez, that's probably overwhelming for a lot of people.
Yeah. Simplicity makes sense. They don't feel overwhelmed. I agree. But then it opens up new possibilities if you're willing to let yourself be overwhelmed for a short period of time. We are well over an hour now, so we should probably start landing this plane safely here.
And by the way, there are people who disagree with Ron's Rosling. Hans
Swedish
Rosling.
Guy.
And Steven Pinker, I'm finishing reading this guy's article, who's just basically, it doesn't seem like, so far he's basically saying that they cherry pick their data, but he's not giving an example.
They just do?
Yeah, he's saying that data on poverty has only been collected since 1981, numbers going back to 1800. I'm assuming that poverty was worse 200 years ago. Why would it be better? He's saying, he's cherry picking, but that doesn't make any sense. The Rosling bubble chart does are extremely uncertain, not to mention meaningless on another level. Saying that we were richer 200 years ago, that we had better living conditions 200 years ago?
It
I think that's an absurd.
He sounds like he has got an axe to grind.
Rosling's chart hides how people have been stripped of the commons in which they traditionally depend.
It's a lucrative business.
And he goes on to say him and Pinker are what are called the intellectual new optimists. They ignore the history of colonialism and commodification when presenting the income numbers, making it all the easier to celebrate. No, I don't think so. What they're saying is that the average income, I've read what he says, the average income of every single person in the entire world is higher than it was 200 years ago by a huge scale. And he actually shows this in a chart where he says that those who are outside of the extreme poverty bubble, so he shows the extreme poverty and he shows that they're all coming together. And he excludes the richest of the rich in doing that. So
this inspires a question for next week of, do we really want something along the lines of, because I would say to that what they'll say is, well, yeah, but the gap's getting higher. When we all get lifted up, my neighbor who already had more than me gets lifted up too. I don't want my neighbor lifted up. I want my neighbor to come down so I can be above my neighbor, which speaks to human sinfulness and envy. So this inspires an interesting thought of, do we really want a rising tide to lift all ships, or do we want our ship to be lifted higher than others?
Yeah, what do we really want in life?
Yeah, because he might have the axe to grind of saying, well, it's not good that it's getting better for everybody. There's some people who should get better for it at a faster rate, and some people that don't deserve for it to get better, depending on what category you fall into.
I don't understand what colonialism has to do with poverty today. Is he, like, making the claim that, like, the people that were, you know, victims of that are just, now they're in the workforce, so that, like, inflates the numbers?
They would say that the colonial system put them so far behind in their ability to advance and their ability to develop and produce that it's an unfair disadvantage. That's a whole giant, like, not even a ball of wax, it's like a keg of wax that we could unpack. So
it's like the white privilege thing.
Pretty much. So while we park this plane, any final thoughts on this idea of the world? Is it getting better or worse? I think there's a general consensus here that things are getting better, if not perfect.
Wait, what?
I would just say if you know, would you rather live 200 years ago or today? And I'd rather live today for sure.
I like being able to take a shower every day, and I couldn't do that.
I mean, that seems.
Jordan Peterson asked a girl something along those lines, like,
"Who's going?
Are you living a better life than your grandparents are?"
Yeah,
something like that. And she was like trying to argue him.
I hope my kids live a better life than I do. All right, well, we got to wrap this sucker up. So for our first episode, I think we managed to avoid the side of the mountain. So I think that's pretty good. Let's set the bar low.
What side of the mountain?
And then whatever side of the mountain. Any side of the mountain. If you crash a plane in any side of a mountain, it's going to end badly. Yeah.
You're still talking about the plane analogy.
Yes, yes. You don't want to crash the plane into the side of the mountain. That's kind of the whole point of doing a show. And I think we managed to do that. So we hope you enjoyed our discussion today. We will be doing this each Friday for the foreseeable future, Lord willing. And again, if you guys have any feedback, questions, or comments, please feel free to leave them down below. We'd love to respond. Or if you have suggestions of things we'd like to talk about next week, we're going to do our best to respond to those, discuss them. And we're always looking for new material. So if there's a conversation or a particular topic that's close to your heart, please let us know. So thank you for joining us today. Do you guys have any final thoughts or words you want to share? Maybe about your love of bacon and why it's the best thing ever?
No. I have no more thoughts. Bacon? I mean, bacon's okay.
He said bacon's just okay.
I mean, it's fine in a specific context. I wouldn't eat it for every meal.
If the world
I
had
don't know
more
that
meal.
Anybody would eat it for every meal, but bacon's delicious.
Tanner, I know people.
Nothing bacon doesn't make better. I was at a funeral, I would be really sad, but if they gave away free bacon, I'd be a little less sad. All right.
I want to say I appreciate people who actually stayed around and watch, and that if there are glaring issues in the quality of anything, that they should let me know.
Yes, please do.
Including that annoying bouncing thing. Wow, I couldn't see that before. That is
it hasn't been there the
so
whole time.
Annoying.
No, the Acropolis
I would
there.
Get lost if I was watching this. I'd be a squirrel. Like, squirrel.
Just wait till it gets in the corner.
No, you'd have to wait all your life. That one was close.
It was. All right. Well, we've lost this ship, so we're going to call it a day.
Thank you for tuning in to the Agora. Please come back next week, where we'll have another exciting episode. We will be releasing podcasts Monday, but we'll be doing the live stream on Fridays, so tune into that as well on YouTube. Thanks for your support. Leave a like, leave a comment, wherever you may be. And until next time, thanks.